from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Yeah, there should be some passion. This doesn't have to be boring. Boring.
Hey, one thing the game needs is more people like you. You.
Still have grown men run around tight pants.
It's Mookie Betts.
This is Daniel Bard.
Steve Aoki.
Jared Saltalamacchia.
This is Brock Holt.
Hey, this is John Lester.
Baseball
isn't boring.
Welcome to Baseball Isn't Boring. Here's your host, Rob Radford.
We only go to greatness, and greatness always comes back. Thank you, Brian Bannister, for being so great and also being willing to be part of our family. I really appreciate it. I appreciate you. I hope you're having a good offseason.
No, having a good offseason. Hope you're having a happy new year, and it's always good to be here.
I was, as many people know, when Chris Sale got traded, I was on a zip line over Honduras, strapped in. I physically...
Where you should be.
Yeah. See, that's why you know what you're doing. No, you know what? I've had enough. I just throw caution to the wind. I'm just hanging from a zip line over the jungles of Honduras, but I'm strapped in and I'm like, there's nothing I can do. I can't tweet. I can't report. I can't give my opinion. There's nothing I can do or want to do. We all should. And remember this, Brian, remember how that was the week after Christmas, where everyone understood it was time off. It was it wasn't that long ago, man. It wasn't that long ago.
I never worked between Christmas and New Year's with the Red Sox, and we hired two minor league coaches this year. It was full work all the way through the winter break.
Oh, it is what it is. We're adjusting. I do yearn for the days of the lockout where we had a deadline. but anyway, we're moving on. I don't know. This wasn't planned, but we were just talking about the coaches convention that you came from. It's how many coaches are there? So it was in Dallas, right?
It was at the Gaylord. So they rotate the Gaylord hotels the same way the winter meetings does.
Okay.
Next year they're in Washington D.C. at the one south of D.C. But it's a great event. I've never been able to go because selfishly my wife and kids want me to be home for their winter break from school. But it's the only time college and high school baseball coaches get a break where they can all meet up together at the same time.
So give me, I don't know if you don't have to share what you just shared. That's fine. It's up to you, but give me some good like anecdotes. Give me some stories. I didn't realize how big it was. And then the dynamic of new ideas, a bunch of coaches, like-minded coaches, like anything you can that people would be like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah. I mean, I was spoiled in that both my high school coach and my college coach, Mike Gillespie, who just passed away. They were both in the ABCA Hall of Fame. So I was incredibly spoiled getting to learn the game of baseball under two Hall of Fame coaches. So they induct new coaches in the Hall of Fame every year at the amateur levels. But it's a who's who of baseball there. And then quite a few of the major league teams send out contingents to just kind of observe or pick up on new ideas here or there. And then the Tech Trade Expo is really world class. You see a lot of the newest technology and all the swag. It's a great event. So I was impressed. And there's everywhere you look. I mean, it's like here in San Francisco we have Santa Con. It's almost like Baseball Coach Con, and everybody's in their sweat outfits. And it's almost you know, Thomas Crown affair. Everybody, everywhere you look, it's the same guy.
All right, so give me the you love technology. I can tell. Like as I told Andrew Bailey the other day, it's like you had Apollo 13 as your camera setup. You know, but you love technology. There must have been something you're like, oh wow, this is interesting. I mean, anytime you have a trade show, and maybe it's not even something that's practical, but give me something that you saw that was like, oh, that was different.
You know, we've actually been searching for years, and I'll give a shout out to the GT guys. They're down in Florida. We've been trying to come up with strike zone strings forever that are actually good and then won't move in the wind or won't deteriorate over time. And I think after 100 years of somebody trying to figure it out, I think they actually pulled off two sticks with a zone that actually will give the pitcher the strike zone. You know, we've had crazy ideas to make like a holographic strike zone with lasers or something, just so when a guy throws a pen, he can see if the ball went through the zone or not. Kind of like the K zone on TV, but I think they actually came up with something, and I'm excited to try it out this year.
What I mean, you have to elaborate. Like, first of all, it's great that I'm asking you. I expected you to be like, here's a hologram of Ted Williams. You could or whatever it is, but. What is different about these strike zone strings? Because I've seen them. Like you go to spring training, they're set up, the bullpens are set up, and the whole idea is hit that spot, don't move the string. Like, so how's this different?
I mean, you saw us in Boston, Dana Lavangie's out there. We're drilling sticks in the ground. We're taking shoelaces and trying to make a zone. I mean, there was just never a good way to do it. And, so they built these 6 foot tall sticks on both sides of the plate, angular strings, because the zone tends to sag. You have strings going across the zone, they tend to sag. You don't get a perfect representation of the strike zone. I think they actually solved it, and the pitcher just gets to look at the zone and see it, and I think it's going to be a nice visual. So I think they finally came up with a good product that everybody's been trying to replicate for years.
You know, one of the worst jobs in the world, I think, is being a catcher behind strike zone strings. Yeah, because they're ricocheting all over the place, right?
I think we can clarify that to being a catcher in general. You know, we throw in the hitting dummy, and they're getting ricochets off the hitting dummy. And, you know, I got my medicine when they made me put the catcher gear on at Fenway and try and catch Stephen Wright's knuckleball.
Oh,
it was one of the worst, most terrifying 20 minutes of my life. I played catch him every day, but when he's in there throwing full speed, and you don't know what's going to happen. I was getting balls hit all over me. So I don't envy catchers at all. And I'm very grateful for what they do.
How many, speaking of which, this is, again, you were just, I think every time I talk to you, I sort of go down this rabbit hole of things, but how many, is there any knuckleballers at all? I mean, I know George Kirby threw the one in honor of Tim Wakefield, which by the way, was a really good knuckleball. I watched that again the other day. Do you have anyone?
Yeah, Seager struggled with it.
Yeah,
there's still guys out there trying to throw it. I almost wish MLB would kind of like foster an underground knuckleballers camp. It would just be fun. Like, just bring out a bunch of pitchers, and you know, we could chip in some money. And I would just love to see that part of baseball not go away. It's all about velo right now, but a lot of those knuckleballers just need time and refinement and reps. And they just usually don't get a fair shake because it's all about velo. And so when one finally sneaks through, I mean, at an elite level, Stephen Wright, R.A. Dickey, Wakefield, I mean, they can pitch at the top of the league when they're good and pitch for a long time. So it's something that we should develop. Most teams are skittish on it, and I wish there was a better way to keep a culture of knuckleballing going.
Well, two things. Number one, my guess is, you know, everyone likes control and certainty. And there's two things that you don't have with a knuckleball: control or certainty. This is why, you know, when it comes to postseason, you know, I remember Tim, he would, you know, have these unbelievable runs, and then you get to the postseason, and as good as he was, there'd be like, oh, I don't know if we can do that because maybe it's a bad day. Yeah. And so, and then the camp thing, I love that, where, actually, Bailey was saying this the other day that he heard about the Japanese pitchers with the splitters camps, you know, for that specific, because I mentioned what you had said on the last podcast, which I thought was awesome, where these guys in Japan are coming out of their crib throwing splitters, and we're catching up here in the States on it, and there's a reason why that has happened. So I like your knuckleball idea because it's the same idea, right? Unless I'm stupid.
Yeah, and the Japanese pitchers are getting paid this offseason, and there's a lot of good free agents still out there who aren't throwing splitters. You know, maybe that's the secret right now.
I knew it didn't take much to, like, it's like that. Speaking of straight balls right down the middle, if I bring up splitter to you, I'm like, I could see you're like, oh yes, let's go.
Yeah,
let's
talk splitter season.
Yeah. All right, let's get down to brass tacks. You're with the White Sox. You've been with the White Sox now for at least a few months. You got your feet under you. You're ready to go. Glendale, right? Glendale.
Yeah.
Glendale. What is the thing that when you go to the White Sox, so an unnamed pitcher, which I may or may not have written a book with, had said when he went from the Dodgers to the White Sox, there was a big difference, right? Not like all good people, everybody has their strengths, but in terms of technology, in terms of, you know, resources in that way, in measuring things. When you got there, and this, maybe this is part of your goal to build this up, what's your perspective of that?
I think one of the most interesting scenarios in baseball, and I think you could probably apply it to the corporate world in general, is whenever you kind of have an embedded group of people for a long time, I think the most dangerous thing in baseball is not knowing what you don't know. I think you can turn into an echo chamber of ideas where if there's not a lot of outside influences, early on, I think you can be ahead of the trends and ahead of the curve. But after a while, you start, I think, losing perspective little by little on what other teams are doing, how they're innovating, the people they're bringing in. So it's not a negative, because one of the things I've appreciated the most so far is just the quality of people and the loyalty. But I think what's been great this offseason is there's been an infusion of new ideas with the White Sox. Josh Barfield coming over from the Diamondbacks, who was responsible for Corbin Carroll, et cetera, and did a great job on the position player side. I'm working with the pitching group to come up with some new ideas and attack different styles of pitching, you know, talking with the scouts, talking with the front office. It just ends up, generating fresh blood in that you end up investing in new areas, coming up with new styles you want to go out and get, and different ways of playing the game. I always talk about it. It's like sitting at the final table of the World Series of Poker. Every team in baseball has their style and their preferred way to play. We all know the odds at this point. We know all the analytics. There's just a style of play. And some styles of play you feel more comfortable with, and some styles, underperform a little bit. And you want to be playing a style that's relevant and innovative and that you feel like you can follow through on. And I think that's the direction we're headed. And it doesn't happen instantly. It's always a multi-year process. But it's been really fun to work alongside the people that were brought in and know that the only way to go is up from here. And that's where you want to get into an organization, is when people are excited about trying new things. And, the only direction you go is up.
Can you give me a new thing without, I don't want you to any trade secrets, but can you give me a new thing?
I think it's, one of my big philosophies is just having a lot of diversity of styles on a pitching staff. And so being able to have knuckleballers, submarine pitchers, splitters, guys that can pitch east, west, north, south, approach angle guys, guys that can get guys out with less velo, all those styles can be really valuable. And so it's kind of like collecting all these outliers. There's pitchers all over the place that, if you know how to tap into the right strengths and what makes them unique, they can get hitters out, because you're just trying to get a hitter to miss by a little bit. And when you start kind of discussing pitchers in a new light and valuing different types of attributes, I think you can really get out there and do some cool things with a lot of unique pitchers.
Okay. So it's Speaking of unique pitchers, we had one on this week. It's, like I said, it's White Sox week, sort of. Dylan Cease. I don't know if you knew this. I said, what pitches have you invented? He's a smart guy. He's a very intriguing guy. He put together a poem about baseballs and boring literally in 5 minutes. I don't know if it was AI or not. I choose to believe it wasn't. He said that he's been fiddling with Kevin Gausman splitter. Do you know about this?
The one thing I know about Dylan so far is he gives great food recommendations, because he gave me a couple of recommendations right off the bat in Chicago, and I went to those restaurants and he was spot on, and I'm a foodie. So if he's onto something, then it's probably good for him. And I know we're going to explore it in spring training regardless, because yeah. I know he messed with the changeup last year. He's just, you know, in that elite group of pitchers. When you average out his numbers the last couple of years, he's one of the best starters in the game. Had the great run 2 years ago where he was in the finalist for the Cy Young. And if he wants to add something, he's pretty committed to it. So I'm just looking forward to spending more time with him. I got a week with him at the end of the season, and we'll get a lot of time in spring training.
Yeah, I got to be honest with you. I don't know how committed he is to that pitch. I think he's just fit. Like I said, I think fiddling with it is a. But listen, this is why you do it. This is, who knows? Maybe it takes off. But what is the, because, you know, not only because we had him on, but because Dylan's in the news, and because I said I was pumping him up. I said, listen, you're not in trade rumors unless you're one of the best pitchers in baseball. And I told him, I said, I will pick him for Cy Young. I believe I picked him for Cy Young this year. I'll do it next year. I know that his numbers weren't great. But from your perspective coming in, what's the most intriguing thing about Dylan Cease?
He falls into that category. If you look at the Gerrit Coles, the Verlanders, it's kind of the power riding fastball with the two power breaking balls. And it's just a style of pitching that's very effective. When he's right, he's hiding the ball well. When he's off a little bit, he's not hiding it as well, or tipping a little bit. So I think just cleaning up some of the little things and then getting him back to what made him so good 2 years ago is the priority. But, he's one of the best pitchers in the world. And I just love being around him. There's some guys that just instantly have a presence. And like you talked about the poem, like, they just have ways to make conversation where some pitchers, it's a little tougher to come up with something to talk about. But I mean, he instantly has a subject matter for the day, and it's fun to be around him and go on a tangent, whatever he wants to talk about that day. So he's already won me over as one of my favorite pitchers in the game.
Well, he's won us over also because everything you described is what makes a good podcast. I mean, we've honestly, we talked probably more about disc golf than we have frisbee golf than we have pitching. But so it's an interesting one. I do think that also anybody who reads a lot like he does, as someone who doesn't read a lot, but I admire that. I admire he's constantly reading, and that shows me something. He's an intellectual guy. All right, so let's get back to another guy on your staff, a new guy, Eric Fetty. Talk to me about, now, I always find this interesting about the courting, the information, what this is what we have, this is what we have to offer, this is what we see in you, this is where we're going, all of it. The floor is yours with them, with that situation.
You know, whenever a pitcher goes overseas, everybody immediately says, you know, quality of competition, that, you know, if they perform better, it's because the hitters weren't as good. You'll hear that over and over again. What I look for is, did something significant change with this pitcher? Whereas it's not just the same guy that pitched in MLB going overseas and having increased success because the hitters aren't as good. If there's actual changes to the arsenal, changes to the grips, changes to the style of pitching, now there's reason to believe that there's a significant jump in talent and production. And so you have to adjust for quality of competition. But what I saw is similar to, you know, changes that Logan Webb made, who I had in San Francisco the last couple of years. et cetera. You know, Alex Cobb, we did a lot of things too. Kevin Gausman. So I play a lot with the seams on the baseball, and I look for guys that have that capability because only certain pitchers have the anatomical attributes to actually leverage the seams on the baseball and generate later movement, extra movement, et cetera. So he was always one of those guys that I had kind of bookmarked as being a candidate for that style of pitching to get a little more out of him. And he went on his own, worked at the same facility that Logan Webb did in the offseason, and then went over to Asia, was basically, you know, Cy Young MVP, and was leveraging all the new things he added. And then, you know, there's a reason to bet on an improved skill set, as opposed to this was the same guy that had a 5-year A that just faced weaker hitters. That's often the argument. I look for actual improvements in skill sets, and I look for pitchers that are passionate about getting better. And he put in the work, he made himself better. And so there's always a little regression coming back to better quality competition, but I'm excited to be around him for the first time this spring.
You know, when you're talking, and I'm talking about recruiting and convincing, I would imagine a lot of stuff that you said hit home for him. You know, everything from the guys you worked out with, the explanation that you had, because it would be easy for an organization to say, hey, good job over there. Yeah, keep it up. There you go. But here's the reason why we think that you are going to be good. I don't know what was the thing that you felt like hit home the most for him, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, him having Scott Boras as an agent, ultimately, it came down to dollars. You had to be the highest bidder, as Scott's norm. but we were excited about the style he was pitching in, you know, the way that our offseason had gone so far, adding defense up the middle, and just playing in a small ballpark, trying to keep the ball in the ballpark, because the White Sox last year struggled with walks. Home runs are always an issue because the ball flies. And so having a pitcher that could keep the ball on the ground, leverage the defense a little bit, there was some synergy there where at the cost that he was going to come out as a free agent, it made sense for us in trying to build out innings and a rotation.
Well, I think, you know, I spun it as what, how did you convince him? But really the fact is that you had, like you said, he felt like there was a good place for him to land to succeed, along with the money in years. So there you go. I'm excited to, after your explanation of it, to see him pitch, because we get so caught up in which is the best free agent. I'm not saying he's going to be the best free agent, but whatever, like, it's stranger things have happened. So it's going to be, and you mentioned up the middle. That's another thing I wanted to ask you about, Maldonado. So how much from the organization was that prioritized? Did he say, go in and say, all right, part of this whole figuring this whole thing out, this piece has to also be part of it. Take me through that a little bit.
You know, coming off 101 lost season, something wasn't right. And what we're trying to do is build it the right way. And sometimes you have to start with veteran leadership or players that have been exposed to the best ideas in the game. I try to get exposed to the best ideas in the game from a coaching perspective, but it's also helpful when there's players who have been exposed to the best idea and having that synergy. So between Stassi, who was dealing with you know, his family the previous year, and Maldonado, just two sets of catchers that are very advanced in what they do, and pairing them up with Drew Butera, longtime major league catcher. First time the White Sox have had a dedicated catching guy at the major league level. So what you do from there is, and you can argue, you know, about the offense, you can do a lot of things, but we have to start somewhere as far as building an elite pitching culture. And Maldonado, having been in Houston all those years, Stassi really being exposed to some of the better pitchers in the game, and Butera, you know, being well-traveled as a catcher and just having a family in the game, we're going to be able to build a catching culture that future catchers can build off of. It's going to have a trickle-down effect throughout the minor leagues, and when we bring in future free agents or future trades, we'll have established the infrastructure behind the scenes that allow us to be more productive on both the pitching and the catching side. So there are multiple layers to it beyond just, an ad hoc signing. Bringing in catchers who have been some of the best in the game at one point is going to help infuse a lot of new ideas into what we're doing and really set the culture for where we want to be in future years.
That must be like such a security blanket, man. It must be such a security blanket for you guys to know that, because if you aren't, it goes to the analytics stuff, the messaging, the analytics to the players. And this is another messaging thing. But yeah, for you, it must be good, I think. Right.
Yeah. So, when you know you have a veteran back there, catchers compound the quality of your pitching staff. So you're willing to make sacrifices on the offensive side to scale up all of the attributes of the pitchers. And it's a strategic trade-off in the short term in order to build a culture, an analytics culture, and just a way of working pregame, postgame that allows us to be a superior team in the future.
All right, two more pitchers I want to ask you about. One is pitching for you. Another is not. I will start with the one that's pitching with you and finish with the one who's not. A friend of the program, Michael Kopech. I've got a chance to be around Michael ever since, when you were with the Red Sox organization, and he's come so far. I mean, he's come so far in so many ways, and I really, really enjoy talking to him, and he's shown glimpses. I know that he was really banged up last year. But he has so much potential. He's not the guy anymore, and correct me if I'm wrong, not the guy who's going to be, here's a video of me throwing 110 miles an hour, with a 15-foot running start, not worrying about that. But what's your take on Kopech? I think he's such an interesting guy.
Yeah, he's been great. And, having had him with the Red Sox and now with the White Sox, I've kind of seen the mellowing out of his personality. The intensity and the fire is still there, but it's a more mature version of what I saw many years ago, where he was young and excited, but also raw at the same time. And for me, I want to put him in the best role where he's going to succeed. And, for a lot of pitchers, it's finding a sweet spot between role and preparation. And some guys overthink, some guys work out too much. It's kind of solving what a pitcher needs in between outings in order to get the most out of him, I think, is a big part of getting the most out of Kopech. So he's a tremendous athlete. I mean, at one point, one of the hardest throwers in the game, and that velo is still in there. And so just putting him in a position where he can succeed and let the ball eat and not have to overthink anything or over game plan or worry about things, not have too much downtime, is a big part of how we can support him, because he's a different guy than he used to be. But all that talent is still in there, and I'm really excited to watch him pitch in 2024.
Do you remember? I mean, obviously you remember when he was young, and obviously he goes over in the Chris Sale trade, and that you trade for Chris Sale, you got to give up something. So, but your perspective back then about what he was going to be. And like you said, we all thought, oh, he's the guy who throws 105 with, he looks like Thor, but now it's different. So do you remember that? Do you remember like when that trade was made, what your thoughts were?
Yeah. And, I distinctly remember because he had been throwing well in the Arizona Fall League at the time. And, multiple different arms have been talked about in that trade. I remember I was in the room when it went down at the winter meetings, and Jason Groom's name was in there, et cetera. But Kopech had been throwing 100 in the fall league and teams were on him. And so, just at that time, guys that throw 100 plus for me really have a chance to be elite leverage relievers or closers. I kind of saw him as like potentially one of the better closers in the game. With ability to throw 101, 102, et cetera. When guys have that much velo, it's just easier to just let them eat for an inning. Everybody wants them to be a starter, but it always feels like, man, that skill set can go out and just dominate for an inning. So kind of back then, that was my own personal perspective, is that this guy's going to be one of the best leverage relievers in baseball at some point. And I think you saw that a couple of years ago. He was. So the future is still so bright for him. And ultimately, I just want him to be in a role that he's comfortable with, and he can let all that physicality shine through, because he's a specimen. He's put together, and you just stand around him and you feel really insecure about yourself. That's how put together he is.
Yeah. It was so good to catch up with him a couple different times this year. And like I said, I mean, I remember going through the whole deal with him, as you guys did. I mean, I remember him walking by with a cast. Why do you have a cast? And then you find out you got a fight with a roommate, and like all of that stuff. And now you land like this guy who is a very thoughtful guy and a good guy. And by the way, I can't let you go like without asking you, what's it? Not everybody is in a room for a Chris Sale trade. I mean, that must have been fun, right? Wild. I don't know.
I mean, it was one of the bigger trades, in the game for a while. And to watch it go down, to see the back and forth, Dombrowski would field the calls. And I remember we were just kind of like spitting through names and trying to get the valuations right. And it was just a lot of fun. When that one happened, that was a big deal, because we knew we were all in and we were going for it. And it was pretty exciting.
Yeah, I mean, I remember Dave. He was in such a good mood. He was such a good mood, like after the fact. Speaking of which, this is how much of a pro that I am. I'm morphing into the Chris Sale conversation. You had put up after his trading, when I was on the zip line, it looked like a slow motion camera version of one of the most unique fastballs. I forget exactly what you tweeted out, but one of the most unique fastballs. Which obviously leads me to, okay, tell me about it. Tell me about your perspective of a healthy Chris Sale, what that's like, why you put that video up, what's different about him.
Yeah, I mean, every picture I've seen for the last 6 or 7 years is me walking around Fort Myers with a camera and a tripod. You know, every article, somehow that got into all the stock photo agencies. And so I took all these high-speed videos for years, and some of them, creative aesthetic angles, just because I wanted to watch from, like, the batter's perspective. So I had set up high-speed cameras behind home plate just to see what does Chris Sale's fastball look like from behind the catcher. What does the umpire see? What does the batter see? And just the aesthetics of that particular fastball that I posted. Chris has an amazing delivery. He's this skinny, wiry, tall. He strides cross body. He jumps after he throws towards first base and kind of slings it, kind of launches it. And he just has like perfect spin on the baseball. So the way that I always think back to 2017, he punched out 308 guys and was throwing 98 miles an hour in the last inning sometimes, kind of just jumping off the mound and slinging his sidearm. It was one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. And then to get to watch it under high-speed camera, just aesthetically was incredible. And so I have just tons of footage like that. And it's just fun to appreciate the talent that he has. So I had seen Alex Cora post something on Instagram and kind of dove into my hard drives. And I had remembered that video clip in particular that I've probably watched it 1,000 times. And I just wanted the rest of the world to appreciate the beauty of Chris Sale's fastball in slow motion. And it's really just amazing how he just like stares down the barrel of that fastball throughout the whole clip and just is so poised, so balanced. And it's really fun to watch.
Well, that's the thing, is that I look at it and I'm like, that's a cool image. You look at it as saying, look, where's his fingertips? Where are his eyes? Where's his balance? All of that, right?
Yeah, he's very special at what he does. You wouldn't teach that delivery to other pitchers, but when pitchers organically have a delivery like that and they can still repeat themselves pitch after pitch and produce elite velocity or spin or pitch shapes, you just tip their cap, because as a coach, you just don't want to disrupt that kind of art on the mound.
All right, last thing. What's that guitar behind your head?
That's actually one of my travel guitars that I would take on the road. So it's one of my cheaper ones, but I have a nice collection of Gibsons and old speaker stacks. And I get out here, at least back in the day, would wail a little bit. And all it's right. tough to do with kids now, but I have a lot of fun doing it.
Yeah. Well, you got to help me with my Hall of Fame ballot reveal next year, please. Tap into your famous USC friends. I tried getting Eddie Vedder. Did not work out. But I like where I landed, Brian. I did the whole Immaculate Grid thing. So, listen. So, there you go.
Very nice. Very nice.
Yeah, you know, we're trying. But you're a creative guy. You can help me next year. is there, you know, I didn't. The only pitcher I voted for, I think, was Wagner. But, you know, the one, Burley had a case, man. He had a case. It's what's amazing about Burley is that obviously he pitched a long time. And you go to his last year, he's still under a 4 ERA. I mean, he's still, he's pitching deep into games. You know, he was good across the board. So, yeah. I don't
know. Yeah, the longevity case. You know, I'm a little biased towards it now because we don't see longevity anymore. You don't see pitchers going deep into games. You don't see pitchers being left out there to battle through the ups and downs. And my favorite Burley story was I pitched against him in Kansas City, and he came out and gave 6, 7, 8 runs in the first inning and ended up staying in the game and winning.
Really?
They left him in for 8 innings, even after getting shelled in the first.
Oh.
Yeah, he just kept going out there, doing his thing, picking people off at first, and just they kept creeping back, and he ended up getting the win in that game, and it was one of the gutsiest performances I've ever seen. Oh. So I always have tremendous respect for Mark Burley.
By the way, that's never, ever happening ever again. Ever. Ever.
Ever again.
Never, never. No. All right. Well, no. Thanks, man. I really appreciate it. Always great.
Always a pleasure.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.